This is a COVID-1984 alert. In order to help you to decide when you will take our Pfizer experimental gene-altering therapy, we have prepared a simple six-step cost-benefit analysis that even your cute puppy could understand. Ask yourself, will it stop me getting COVID? Will it stop me spreading COVID? Has it been long-term safety tested on humans? Have there been no deaths or injuries caused to date? Are the makers liable for any damage or injury caused? Have the makers never been convicted of criminal fraud and fined $2.3 billion? Even if you answered no to all these questions, your choice is simple. No jab, no job. Just take your bloody shot and shut up. Be brave. Do not comply.
October 21st, 2021, welcome to Counterspin. As you can see, we're outside the Halley Court. We're seeing an attempt taken on the government over the no jab, no job case. How that turns out remains to be seen. But apparently the judge is listening, he's been fair, and he's actually asking questions about the science. That's something that the previous judges obviously haven't. So that's good. Come up on the show tonight, as you can see, you'll be watching this tonight, is Jeanette Brock, who's working alongside with Linda Wharton, with the New Zealand Health Forum. She's an advisor, an ACC advisor. So if anyone has any issues with claims for ACC, please get in touch with her. You can email us through the show, we can pass on your details, or find New Zealand Health Forum and go directly there. Also, we have a good compilation towards them by Coronavirus Plushie. So big shout out to him, I got to meet him today, top bloke. And cut it for a minute.
Rolling.
Okay, standing here with Sue Gray. She's taken the jab case, as everyone's heard it, to our court here in Wellington. This is the beehive, and of course the steps of Parliament, where our producer decided to give Jacinda Ardern's stick before. We'll bring that to you later. So, Sue, awesome job so far. I understand the judge is actually listening. He's actually asking questions about the science. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Well, it's really exciting, actually, because quite a lot of judges are not that interested in the kind of substance of the case. They just want to know about the process. But he's, like, really into it. It's great. He's asking good questions. He's read everything. We've got really good information there from Dr. Sophie February, who's done affidavit evidence about the risks and the uncertainties and, you know, the crux of it, that if the vaccine doesn't stop transmission, what's the whole point?
Exactly.
Because that just cuts away the whole basis of what they're saying. And the best the government seems to be saying is, we hope it does. Well, you know, if I'm being forced to have a vaccine to keep my job, I'd like to know more than we hope it does.
And then people will ask themselves as well, I mean, how many people have taken the placebo thinking that they were at risk but not really protected and things like that? There's my position where I said it's never been about a virus, because of meetings I've had where this was planned way in advance before they even started shutting everything down, and the documents were proven for that. The fact that the Official Information Act requests just completely destroy the government's narrative and position. The science doesn't back a damn thing, and you're there now saying, hang on, the whole process you've carried on, you're based on nothing. When we asked you to show that, you didn't have it, so we've had to delay, and here we are now, finally got in front of a judge who hopefully will interpret all of that as being, something's dodgy.
Well, you know, it is complicated, and there's a lot of stuff that's been happening for a couple of years now, at least, in this. But the more and more extreme it gets, the more and more urgent it is for the judge to actually step up and have a good look at things.
Yeah.
And that's really, I mean, otherwise it's abuse of power, you know, unbridled power of the executive, which has been a problem for a hell of a long time, but it seems to be getting a bigger and bigger problem. So we really do have to just get someone independent looking at things, and it's great that we've got a judge who seems to be interested in looking at the whole big picture and not just sort of process.
Absolutely. Now, everyone knows Sue Gray, of course, because we've had you on the show plenty of times. You always bring the goods. But you've also got a team here with you. Can you introduce your team or just let people know who's with you here supporting you in the case?
So we've got Catherine Henry, who's the lawyer from Oamaru, who fronted up and offered to help. And we've been working on a few things together. And then I said, well, hey, you guys want to come along and help us in court? And she leapt at the chance. And it's just fantastic for me, because I'm used to being the only one there with like a whole lot of Crown lawyers on the other side. So it's awesome having a team. And Kirsten Murphy from Tauranga, who's been doing an awesome job. She's got a law firm up in Tauranga and she's doing some great work. She's done a great letter, she's done the petition, and she's been coordinating all the offers from lawyers that are starting to finally come forward and offer to help us. So she's come all the way down from Tauranga to support today as well. She's liaising with the clients and liaising with people, because it's quite intense in there, so you've kind of got to...
Do you notice it's the woman leading the fight? Yeah. I said it on the show before, where are you blokes? Come on. We're looking bad. We're actually looking emancipated. You know, we're having our nuts chopped off, guys. Start taking the role and looking after these ladies.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's a lot of people out here today. I'm just blown away, especially like it was different last time when people could come into court and watch. You know, there's a massive crowd, and then we had two courtrooms full of people. But this time, because now the new COVID level 2 is different than the old COVID level 2, and nobody hardly is allowed in. But people are just still hanging around and watching and supporting, and that's really amazing.
You had a good crowd this morning.
Yeah, it's a big crowd. Big crowd. So,
But of course, mainstream media now going to paint that as, maybe a dozen turned up, you know, as they always do.
I don't know. Well, they had some cameras in the court, so I don't know if they're showing anything. Hopefully they are.
There's a few people we've seen who are watching the link.
Yeah.
So apparently there's a lot of people watching the link.
200 have gone out, apparently.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, they had to come up with a new system for the link, because they've never had so many people asking for a link before.
Wow.
So that's really exciting too.
Because everyone will be scrutinising everything that's being said. So,
well, there's a lot being said in there that's never been said over here.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. I mean, if it's there, they should explain why they're doing, and not just keep going back through this kind of propaganda statement. I mean, it's good in the court that you actually get through the propaganda and get back to the facts of what's behind it all. And so that's really all we're trying to do, just get as much on the record as we can and get as much out there.
And what's the end game? Apart from winning the case, of course, that's the end game. But what's our end game? Because this is the High Court.
Yeah.
This is where the law comes into it. Yeah. Not so much the process and procedure like the district court. So this is where the law comes. Have these people got... Has the judge got, as part of you... Did you ask for, like, to bring this to a halt until everything was settled?
So the vaccination order would be quashed. That's what we've asked for. So that whole vaccination order will go away. And when we asked for it, it related to the border workers, the airport port workers. But since then, the government's announced that they're going to extend it further, so that teachers, corrections and health workers. So if we can establish that the whole order is unlawful, then that will be gone.
Brilliant.
No doubt the next thing they'll do is come up with another version of something else. If they haven't done it properly, if they've got no power to do what they're doing, hopefully the court will say that, and we'll see what comes out of it all.
Well, yeah, we're only in halfway through the first day. You've got basically four innings.
Whew.
You've got another one to go back in shortly. You'll be heading back there, 2:15. And then we'll see what happens at the end of the day.
Yeah, we'll have a debrief when we come out at 5-ish, whenever we come out.
We'll be here.
Cool.
Thanks, sir. Much appreciated.
Thanks, guys.
Prime Minister, what do you think about the 204 people that have died from the vaccine?
It's not a vaccine, it's a jab.
From the experimental jab. When are you going to start addressing all the families that are experiencing adverse reactions?
Would you put a mask on?
From a jab that is still under experimentation until 2023. How can you let 300 teachers in when we've got teachers losing their jobs because they're being forced to take the jab under this no jab, no job policy? What about all the medical workers you're allowing in from overseas when our own medical doctors and nurses will be losing their jobs because they refuse to take an experimental jab?
She signed off on the full term abortion law. That's how the kindness works.
Yeah. Let's go, Brandon!
Sack the trash!
Let's go, Cindy!
Kick her out!
Join her up!
You'll be told you're not kind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's not kind is that 200 people in this country have already died of the experimental vaccine, and this government's only actually... this media has only agreed to one. They're only acknowledging
Jacinda's
one.
A war criminal.
Wait till New Zealand finds out the truth.
Yep. We're waking up.
We're waking up, Cindy.
Sack the trash.
What about the teenagers that don't even need the experimental vaccine? Children don't even die of COVID. And they're being forced to take this jab.
Freedom of choice.
And you give 12-year-olds the right to choose if they can have an experimental vaccine.
Sack the trash.
What about the children that were kidnapped?
Get rid of your vaccine.
Jacinda, you're a war criminal.
Fuck your vaccine.
Fuck the government.
You're on the Christmas Island, buddy.
Well, we started off over at the High Court, where Sue Gray and her people are taking on the No Jab, No Job court case. You'll remember that the government quickly changed the law last time, that Sue Gray actually pointed out that they were in the wrong. We got a feeling this will probably go the same way, but you never know, there's always hope in us. Then we heard that the Prime Minister was over here on the steps of Parliament. So over we come. And Sarah, of course, did a great job at starting off the questions that mainstream media will not ask. And then the people who were over at the High Court come and joined us and gave her a good telling off, actually, and reminded her what her place in the hierarchy is. Did she listen? Did she acknowledge? No. She never does. Bought and paid for. And now they're swearing in another corporate stooge to sit ahead of the bankrupt corporation that you're all indentured to, and they will no doubt tax you until you die, unless you claim your living status. So we'll see what happens.
Do you want to give us a report?
Just the same as earlier, where he's been very fair, he knows the science, and yeah, we're getting a fair case.
Awesome.
Which is great.
That's great news.
So what, you
couldn't
get it to
work? Yeah, that all just went off. Oh. Apparently someone did put something in the line.
Okay, ready?
Thank you.
smashed her out of her. She was so dead on fire.
Yeah, so how did you feel you went?
I mean, it's really hard to tell, but the great thing is the judge was really interested in everything. He listened to every word, like he's following the whole thing, he's done all the research, so that's really, really good. And he's basically looking at the Bill of Rights, like he's really interested in what's required under the Bill of Rights. So, yeah, because a lot of judges just want to look at the kind of process, but he actually does want to look at the substance, which is good. But yeah, it's really hard, you know, to do our thing and then you sort of sit there and listen while they do theirs. So we finished at about 3:30 outside of it, and then they'll probably go most of tomorrow until lunchtime or so, and then we'll get a chance to talk after that.
Who's representing the Crown and who's on their side?
Austin Powell and Kathy Bell. So they're from Crown Law.
And are they going to be calling any of the politicians in?
They just do it all on the affidavit. It's because it's pretty much what the minister did at the time and whether he looked at the right information. Although the judge is looking at saying, actually, maybe the court should be looking at what's required under the Bill of Rights and having its own look at it. So that's good.
So who's written affidavits for their side?
So for the Crown, it is Christopher Hipkins, the minister, Aisha Beryl, because she signed off on something, Ashley Winfield, Chris James, who's the who's MedSafe. Yeah. Somebody who's a ministerial advisor, and then Dr. Town, who's the Ministry of Health chief scientist.
And so are they basing all their science from the overseas stuff, or...?
They're basing it on whatever they've got to. I mean, we're basically arguing about whether they accept that they don't have clear evidence that it stops transmission. It's basically how much evidence do you need to be able to justify interfering with people's rights, and, you know, at what point is it sort of just a hope and what point does it become justified? But it's pretty much because the government's got this elimination strategy, so it kind of takes them down a path that doesn't really give them any choices. So, yeah, I mean, we're not arguing really in this case about the elimination strategy. We're just saying you can't force someone to have a vaccination that might kill them or make them seriously ill.
That doesn't stop transmission anyway.
And that, I mean, the best evidence they've got is that they basically hope it prevents transmission. They've got indications that it might prevent transmission, that sort of thing.
That doesn't sound like very good science.
No. You know, I mean, the Crown is kind of saying, well, you know, what are we supposed to do? Sit and wait until 2023 when the vaccine's been fully tested? And I'd say, well, do no harm, but, you know.
What about the fact that efficacy is forever dropping?
But, yeah. Well, and the problem with all of this, I mean, the minister made the decision that he made at the time, but then on the other hand, the law requires him to keep reviewing it, and if he gets new information, he should have another look at it. But they just thought that, well, they haven't had a look at it so far. They've just done what they did, and they're just, yeah.
And are the boosters coming into it?
Been a bit of mention of boosters, yeah.
Because they're not really talking much about that publicly.
No, it's quite different. When you get the affidavit evidence, it's really different. Like, the difference between what the minister says and what the advisor says is quite significant. That's really what we're saying. We're saying the minister makes claims, but nobody's supporting those claims. He's just making these safe and effective claims, which is kind of what the government's been doing all along.
So are they saying, is the Crown saying anything that makes any sense at this point?
Oh, I think they're beating the Crown.
Yeah.
I mean, they pull together the best that they've got.
Yeah.
I suppose that's what they do, you know. But there's a lot of, you know, we possibly think that maybe perhaps this might be an indication of whatever, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
If they lose the case, what will they do, do you think? Do they just keep the role? Or, yeah, will they change the law again? Or
my worry is they're so fixated on vaccines
that they will just change the law. That's my worry. It's not what should happen, and it depends what the judge says. But that seems to be all they've ever thought about from day one is where's the vaccine, we need a vaccine, and they've never ever looked at any alternatives. And so that just gives them no choice, really, to go down one path, because they've got to be seen to be doing something. I mean, the problem that I see they've got is they've got the elimination strategy and they're going, oh, haven't we done well? Well, no, not really, because we actually haven't got any herd immunity at all. Are we going to have our borders locked for the next year, 5 years, or are we going to change our strategy, or what are we going to do, you know? And I don't think they've got any exit strategy, but that case isn't really about that, but they sort of touched on that. Yeah.
Because they're not testing people out in the community whether they've got immunity or not.
No. Yeah. Well, they banned the antibody testing so that people could see. See, that's the other thing. I mean, if you're immune, why would you need a vaccine? But that's not doesn't enter into the equation.
Can you bring that in?
Yeah, we can. I mean, we can bring in what's in evidence, and so we've got our medical evidence already, and doctor's evidence. But it's like there's a lot of pages, so it's really hard to which page. Yeah, but sort of highlighting as much as we can.
Who have you got affidavits from on your side?
So from our side, my four clients, and Derek Gilbert, who's an employment advocate, who's been helping them, and Dr. Sophie February.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we've got really good science, and the judges read the science, which is really good.
It's good. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think a lot of it is they make sort of generic statements in the Crown, but if their concern is about the Delta variant, they need to be able to show that their remedy protects against the Delta variant, and they haven't really got that. But it's all hard to know. You know, people are scared because of all the media. They're scared, and they want every protection you can possibly get. But hang on, at what cost? So that's really the question. You know, what is the cost and for the protection, and you know, what alternatives are there? I mean, I'm just saying it's pretty much like informed consent. You need to look at risks, benefits, alternatives, uncertainties.
And at the end of the day, it's still got to be personal choice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's our body.
Yeah.
My body, my choice. I mean, that's always been the principle. And it's, you know, it's a pretty big thing to say that somebody's got to have an injection that hasn't been fully approved, but subject to 58 conditions. And safety and effectiveness and integrity, they don't know the answers.
Conditions still not been addressed?
Oh, some of them have, but we haven't seen what the outcome of those conditions are. We've only seen that they say that they've been answered, but we don't know if the conditions show a good result or a bad result, or that they've got to do more testing or what. I mean, we don't know that.
Cheese, come up.
So, yeah.
What about the fact that children just about can't die of COVID?
Yeah.
And is that coming up?
Not in this really, because we're arguing about the border workers, and so the whole crux of it is transmission really. Like, the Crown's argument is you need to stop transmission. If they say, well, if you can't show that it stops transmission, it's not achieving what you say you're trying to achieve. So that, for this case, I mean, it'd probably be different if it was other people, other groups. Will be slightly different issues, especially for kids. I mean, that's huge different issues. The idea that you use your child as a shield to protect you is a bit outrageous.
Where does the New Zealand Law Society say? You know, what have they been really approached? And as to, you know, they have due influence to the judiciary and, of course, the many lawyers out there who could.
Maybe
called to
the
court. So,
has
there
been any comment at all from them? Do you
know of? Not that I'm
aware of,
I'm not
the
nation.
Do you want me to hold that?
Well,
I'm convening that you have a conversation. Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm running out of brain.
Yeah.
Yay.
having everybody supporting, really awesome having everyone supporting, and it makes such a big difference knowing that people care about what you're doing and you're not just doing some hypothetical thing.
Appreciate
it.
Yeah,
definitely. Really makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And you know, well, it'll be interesting where this gets to, but as I said, wherever it gets to, there's a whole lot of other things. We have to do things. I mean, if we want to claim back our freedom, we have to do things. You have to keep coming up with new ideas.
Yeah.
Because if we don't do anything, they just keep stepping forward and taking off in the way.
Yeah.
So back tomorrow, everybody. So anyone who wants to be here tomorrow, we'll probably start, if we can do signs out, 10 o'clockish. So if you've got a sign, bring it here. I'm sure it's going to be a bit crazier day tomorrow for us. Full on for serve, of course, but yeah, I'll be here from 10 o'clock onwards. Anyone who wants to come talk, wave banners. I'm going to have to steal someone's sign because I didn't bring one with me from Tauranga, but thanks so much for coming today. It's been a most amazing day, incredible weather, incredible kaupapa. We got to see the Governor General looking like it was whatever they look like, and just amazing to see all here. Thank you. Thanks to Sue for thanks.
Well, there we are. End of day one. Ready for day two tomorrow. Hopefully this might be a legal KO. I've already bought the signs. Signs doesn't support, it never has supported the Crown position. So let's hope it all unravels and comes unstuck. Check out this. We've got to get equipment like this. This man here.
Yeah, he's got the gear.
He's got the gear. He's doing the goods. Do the good work for VFF.
Cool. All right. Is that us for the night then?
Yep. I think we might partake in a beverage, I think.
All right. Sounds good.
My name is Jeanette Brock. I live in Carmo, and I've been living here for 12 years, and I've been working as an ACC advocate advisor for coming up 23 years.
And how did you become an ACC advocate?
23 years ago, well, probably about 24 years ago, I had an injury from an injection, from a treatment, and I ended up with a very serious condition called myasthenia gravis.
How many people have you been helping in the last couple of weeks?
Because of my background, I have been advising over the last 22 years, people, a lot of people with treatment injuries, right, including myself. So there is a very, very big process, right, of not just getting the treatment injury claim started, but the whole legalistic side of it, right. And it can be a minefield for some people, but it's pretty simple, really, when you come to it. So I am trying to retire, all right. But I have been concerned with the degree of injuries that I have been seeing that have been posted on Facebook. So I've decided to help and advise the Health Forum New Zealand, Linda Wharton. And so I'm part of that team and mainly just advising them on how to progress treatment injury claims. So in the last fortnight, I've probably have been advising 13 to 16 people who have suffered severe injuries from the vaccine. This is not just a sore shoulder. These are serious injuries from people getting MS, people who have got Guillain-Barre disorder, people who have suffered strokes, and people who have died. It is just shocking, and I'm really, really concerned. And my main concern is that we need to get these claims lodged, at least, even if some of them get turned down. We can help you.
Can you just give, for people, a bit of context, what are the numbers like now with Linda Wharton? Do you know how many deaths we're up to and how many injuries from their database?
From their database, they have recorded 208 deaths so far. And serious injuries, mostly neurological and heart disease, heart damage, pulmonary damage. There's been recorded over 1,000 injuries. And you've got to put it into perspective too. We're talking, since they started the vaccine, which was, I think, February, all right, we have recorded thousands, and over 1,000 injuries.
Can you just clarify on this point as well? Because people are saying that it's a fake people's database. So can you just give a little bit of a description as to how thorough Linda and her team are in actually following up and making sure these are all legitimate claims and injuries?
They are being recorded, all right? So people, like we are today, we're taking a recording face-to-face. They are also taking affidavits. They are recording it all literally by, you know, writing it down, getting it signed, I suspect, from a JP. They've also got, I would suspect that they've got medical records to back it up. The people that have been assigned to take those recordings are either legally capable or medically capable of taking those affidavits. So it's not just something that's made up.
No, and it's not willy-nilly that anyone can just go in and tell you their symptoms and then it's recorded and to bump up the numbers.
No, you actually have to book in. You have to have a set time set aside to take the affidavit down, to take the personal recording, so it's being recorded. And even if people don't believe that these accidents are happening, I've got a friend, all right, who had her second vaccine. She had a rash down her arm. The whole arm went red. It's tingling. She lost the sensation in her fingers. And it's taken, 6 weeks for that rash. She's still got some of the rash there. She can't use her arm properly. And now she, from the time of that injection, she started having heart palpitations where she can't walk from her inside her lounge to her car without feeling fatigued. All right? So she has got heart damage, I suspect, and she needs treatment. So this is, you know, I know more people now who've got vaccine injuries than who've actually had COVID.
Yeah, there's a lot of people struggling to find anyone that they know that's had COVID, but like you say, these injuries are becoming more and more frequent. If someone out there has had an injury, how do they actually go through this application process with ACC?
Well, first of all, they usually, you know, we usually pick them up through Facebook, or they actually contact Linda, the group, and or, you know, we've fairly well, you know, it's a big members base now. We've got over something like 36,000 members. So if the person believes that they've had a serious injury from the vaccine, they'll know themselves, because you can go from one day feeling completely well the next day to feel like that you've been run over by a train, nothing's working properly, you've got headaches, you've got pain, you've got rashes, whatever. The first thing you need to do, as soon as you're capable, all right, go in and see your GP, talk to your GP, all right, and start the process there. And all it is for the GP to fill out a form, an accident form, an ACC 35 for a treatment injury. That then automatically gets sent to ACC, all right, and then they have to investigate it. It's not up to your GP to deny you that. It's your right, all right, to lodge the treatment injury claim. And then the process starts. Out of the 10 ladies, particularly 10 ladies I've been in contact with in the last fortnight, one of them, within 2 days of going to see her GP, her claim has now been accepted. So the process is not difficult. You just have to convince your GP that you have suffered an injury, and it's important. It's not up to them to decide whether it's happened or not. It's ACC's job to investigate it, whether it's not, it has happened.
So the GP literally just has to write down your symptoms, write down what you're showing when you turn up to their office. They don't have to make a judgment call as to what's caused it. They just lodge what's happened, the symptoms, and then ACC will then go through their process and either accept it or deny it. So what if it is accepted, what are these people entitled to?
Well, if the person was working at the time, all right, they're entitled to 80% of their weekly wage, all right. They're entitled to all their treatment. They're entitled to, you know, if they've got children, they can't look after their children, they're entitled to childcare. There's a range of benefits by having that treatment injury claim accepted. You know, because we don't know when you've suffered an injury like that how long it's going to take you to recover. It could be months, it could be years, you know. But the most important is to get that claim lodged, because the benefits do help you in the long run. You will be supported financially if you've suffered such a severe accident. For people who've been retired, that's different. They'll get treatment because they're already on a benefit. They won't get weekly compensation, of course. So, you know, and further on, you know, sort of as you go down, if you can't go back to your job, they'll help you retrain. So there's lots and lots of benefits of lodging that claim.
But you just have to make sure you've got the medical evidence and you've got a timeline, and the sooner the better. As soon as you see something's wrong, you have to go straight away and get that all documented.
You do have it up to a year, all right, to lodge a treatment. Well, a personal injury claim, all right. But the fact is that the sooner you go in there and get that lodged, all right, because evidence gets lost, medical evidence gets lost over time. So the sooner you get in there, the better. Even if you think, oh, you know, I don't want to waste people's time or whatever, it's important. It's important that you register.
And so what happens if people go through this process and then ACC comes back and says, sorry, we don't accept your claim?
All right. That's when you want to employ people like myself. We do have other advocates, all right, that we can put you on to. Right. What they will do is they will pick up your claim, all right. They will get all your records. They will compile a file for you. They will obtain further medical evidence to support your claim.
Okay.
So don't feel just because they've dismissed me, it's the end of it, all right? It's not, once you've lodged that claim, it's not dead.
So they can then go for a review hearing?
That's correct. A review hearing is, because you've got to think of ACC, it's just a department. You've got people there. And most of the time they don't even, you know, they don't even get a medical opinion, an external one. It's all done internally, right? So it's from their doctors. So they sit there and just decline them on the fact that, oh, you know, he didn't present quick enough. They're just on technical points. What a review hearing does is that all the information is gathered. You get an independent a person who looks at, who's legally trained, who looks at all the evidence, all right? But you do need to see a specialist, right? For instance, if you end up with MS or Guillain-Barre's disorder, you do need that diagnosis, all right? And you do need a further a specialist opinion to confirm that diagnosis and to link it, right, to the vaccine injury, all right? Just because it's been 2 weeks later, you start to experience symptoms, severe symptoms, it's not dead in the water, all right? It's not up to you as a person to say, I'm not entitled to cover, because you, as yourself, you are not medically trained. A specialist needs to determine that. And a lot of them can be determined by MRIs and other pathology, all right? So it is daunting, but there's lots of help for you out there.
And then what happens if finally they've had the review hearing and then that fails?
All right, then if there's, you know, if the advocate believes that they've got, there's a very strong case, all right, because you do have advocates that are slanted towards ACC, you know, or they're just, you know, again, they're just denied on a technicality. It then goes to the district court, all right? We can apply for a district court hearing for them. Then the judge can make a decision on that claim, all right, and then make their own decision. They can set aside ACC's decision. They can set aside the reviewer's decision and look at the matter afresh.
And if there's permanent injuries or damage, is there other help that maybe ACC can help with? Or
yes, if there's permanent injury, a person would be entitled to a lump sum. And I think, you know, that's determined on whole person impairment. So don't believe that you're going to get $100,000 or $200,000. No. But it's certainly helpful if you've got a mortgage and And if you've got a severe injury like some of these ladies I'm dealing with, they could end up with something like 80% whole person impairment. They probably would get $120,000. You know, but, you know, I'm just... These are all determined by an assessor. Yeah, but unfortunately, if you die, all right, before you actually have that assessment, a dead person will not have it.
So they won't get that lump sum, but will their family be entitled to anything in the legislation?
Yes, there is provision within the Act, all right, so if the person was working at the time of the injury event, that the partner, all right, is entitled to 60% of their income for the next 5 years. Their children are also entitled to a portion of that as well. So it is very, very helpful, particularly if you today with big mortgages and you know, our outlays are huge with all the bills that we have to pay. So it is worthwhile, and you know, any death from a vaccine is a tragedy, and it should not be happening, because we've been told by our government continuously that this vaccine is safe. And I hate to say it, but that's not true, all right? Because every treatment, regardless of whether it's an injection or pills, comes with a risk, all right? Because we're all completely unique in our genes, and, you know, for what one person's medicine is fine, for the next person, it's not.
And we just need transparency, don't we, from the government to actually be honest about these figures that are on their own website, and now with Linda Wharton and the New Zealand Health Forum, they've got real people statistics, and the fact that the government's not even presenting that information so people can make a fully informed decision, that's the problem. I mean, people, if they want to take the jab, it's on them. But if they're not getting the real information, then they're not actually able to make a proper decision.
No, absolutely not. I'm not anti-vaccine, you know, because it's not, that's not my choice. That if you want to go and have an injection, that is entirely up to you. But I'll give you one example of what happened was that I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Jacinda Ardern put up a website on Facebook, not a website, but a post on her Facebook page asking for people to post any adverse event that they were having. Apparently the posts got up to 30,000, all right, within 24 hours. That post of hers was taken down the next day.
That was an absolute own goal, that post, because she opened Pandora's box, and then she gave everybody the opportunity to talk about their adverse reactions. And she was damned if she took it down, damned if she denied it, but also damned if she kept the conversation going. So, I mean, it was again another good way for the New Zealand population to actually see what's really going on. And hopefully with you putting this testimony forward on how people can actually get help, and your own journey, that they will realise there's support out there. Because I think, yeah, like you say, one, it's the bureaucracy people have a bit of aversion to, and maybe they feel like they don't deserve the money or that it's not justified, but people have got to realise they've paid taxes, all the millions going on this propaganda about the jab. If you are entitled to something, if you have had a vaccine injury, there are things you can do. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Well, the best thing is to, I have got a Facebook page, and just connect to New Zealand Health Forum NZ, or, you know, I do have a web page, and I also have, I'm on Facebook. But just before, we wind up, Jacinda did say, somebody, I think it was on Friday, asked her, if somebody does have an adverse event, what support? And she did say that people were, if they went to ACC and lodged that claim, they would probably be covered. Just before we go, the fact is that, if people are very sceptical that these injuries are happening. But within 2 months of ACC, from August to September, ACC, there was an article on newstalk.co.nz news, national COVID Delta outbreak, ACC pays out almost $130,000 in claims. From August to September, they had in total 382 claims. Now, I've been working, as I said, for nearly 22 years in ACC helping claimants, and I have never seen that many claims come through so quickly, all right? And to say that these injuries are not happening is wrong. And we should be getting more of a balanced opinion. Well, we need to know these figures are happening.
And we did see after the Jabathon on Saturday that somebody in Takaka actually collapsed at one of these jab centres. Yes. And that made the mainstream media.
But there's not enough,
no.
Because, you know, when I try and converse with people on Facebook, they don't believe me. They think I'm lying. They don't. They just said I'm making it up. And I said, unfortunately, I'm not.
Yeah, and you're personally dealing with these people, so you absolutely know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And hopefully you don't have too many people contacting you. That would be the ideal situation, but we know it's probably not going to be the case.
Probably not, but that's all right. Well, you know, I can refer them on. I am retired, but I can certainly give them advice. And I do have a guide, all right, of how to progress your treatment and reclaim. And I'm certainly happy to, you know, support anyone who has suffered from a severe reaction. Because it's important. We need to get you support. And we need the public of New Zealand to know how many people have been damaged. This is not a safe vaccine. Not for everybody.
And we will say again here that if you have had any injuries, vaccine injuries, and you'd like to tell your story, we can here at Counterspin do it anonymously. We can disguise your voice. We can disguise your face. We'll give you a different name so that nobody can link it back to you, just because we know, you know, New Zealand's a small place and maybe some people aren't ready to put their face to their story. So if you are out there and you'd like us to tell that, please get in touch. info@counterspinmedia.com, and if you'd like to get in touch with the New Zealand Health Forum, then you can also reach Jeanette that way.
This is a COVID-1984 announcement and a New Zealand government hypocrisy alert. Kia ora. The Ministry of Health have forwarded me your inquiry below regarding implementing mandatory vaccines for members of Parliament and Cabinet. As members of Parliament and Cabinet members are democratically elected representatives of the people of New Zealand, it is unlawful to obstruct or impede any member from carrying out their duty as an elected official. It is likely that a rule or law requiring MPs to be vaccinated in order to attend the House would violate this long-standing democratic principle. Nga mihi. Oh. And you plebs can get stuffed. And get jabbed. Unite against COVID-1984. Be brave. Do not comply.
Now, I know some people are nervous about the vaccine and wanting to wait a bit longer to see what happens. I understand.
We have, as of today, collected over 1,000 injury reports in the citizens' database, and we actually haven't collected the mild ones.
It's natural to have questions, but I can assure you the vaccine is safe.
So we're up to about 202 deaths. So just to make it clear, these are sudden and unexpected deaths that are temporally related to the receipt of the first or second dose of the vaccine.
People are talking, and you're talking about vaccine hesitancy. You know, no one's going to want to take a shot if they think that's going to end their life. That is a full stop vaccine hesitancy.
Yeah, let me just start where I was, though. I don't want people to be frightened of this virus. One of the most esteemed epidemiologists, Dr. John Ioannidis, working at Stanford in America, he's been tracking this, you know, this infection around the world for over a year. And he's recognized by the WHO. He'll often have his reports on the WHO website.
If you are under 70 and you get the virus, your chances of dying
are less than 0.1%. This is now internationally acknowledged, and John Ioannidis, one of the foremost epidemiologists in the world of Stanford, has published this, and this has appeared on the bulletin of the WHO in October. So anyone who doubts this is doubting a world authority.
And that same world authority, Professor John Ioannidis, recently did another study which found that, in most of the world, the infection fatality rate for COVID-19 is less than 0.2%, which is in the range of the IFR for seasonal influenza, with corresponding survival rates of over 99% in all age groups between 0 and 69 years.
You've all heard me say many times before that getting vaccinated is the number one thing that you can do alongside following restrictions to help stop the spread of the virus. Vaccination helps in playing your part to protect children and vulnerable people.
The children themselves are at no meaningful risk of dying with the virus.
Over all of North America, there isn't a single reported case of a child dying of COVID who did not already have a very serious underlying disease.
I'm just going to just something that I think is quite important, at least for me, in terms of the need for a vaccine. It's just from this particular plot here, which was kind of reassuring for me early in the, when I was trying to figure out how bad COVID was. And so what I did was look at background deaths, and I was given some data in 2019, and allegedly there's no COVID, and that's the age distribution of deaths in New Zealand during that time in the era of no COVID. So that's the black. And then I superimposed on that the COVID deaths, and I could only get into the nearest 10 years because that's what was given in the papers. But when I plotted them together and did a statistical test, I found that there was absolutely no difference in the distribution of age at death with COVID and that without. And so I think this has an important bearing on the need for the vaccine, particularly when we're hearing about people who have a severe reaction to the first one and then being coerced to have the second one. That to me is particularly frightening. Virtually no one on the other side brings up that the average age of death with COVID in New Zealand is 82, which also happens to be our life expectancy. Half of us are dead by that age anyway.
This Saturday, all across the country, we are pushing the vaccination message. Super Saturday is your chance to roll up your sleeve for New Zealand and help make us one of the most vaccinated and therefore protected countries in the world.
And you probably are well aware of this. In Israel, far more than 80% of people who are developing COVID-19 are fully vaccinated.
In Israel, where more than 80% of adults are vaccinated, COVID cases are spiking.
The Delta peak in Israel is just as big as the pre-vaccinated peak. They actually have they have two big peaks now, one unvaccinated, one fully vaccinated. It's obvious the vaccine is not stopping Delta. Almost everybody has 80, 90%, 100% Delta. Go over to Singapore, same thing. Go over to Iceland, same thing. Gibraltar, same thing.
Currently, 82% of eligible New Zealanders aged 12 and over have had their first dose of the vaccine, and 58% have had their second and are now fully vaccinated.
Essentially, we would consider them fully vaccinated.
How did they test positive if they were fully vaccinated?
So it is still, in fact, we entirely expect that people who are vaccinated will still get COVID-19.
In Auckland, those numbers are 87% first dose and 63% second dose. Overall, these are good figures, and according to Our World in Data, put us ahead of the United States and Germany and just behind the United Kingdom. But they aren't high enough yet to feel confident that we can ease restrictions dramatically without seeing a big surge in cases that could overwhelm our health services.
It's the vaccinated that are loading up Israeli hospitals. In fact, the majority of those dying with COVID-19 are vaccinated. Go up to the UK, a little different because they have Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca. Now we're talking about probably 50% of those with Delta are fully vaccinated. And of those who are dying in the UK, it's about 65% fully vaccinated. Okay, 65%. And the death rates among those hospitalized with Delta in the UK, as well as the United States, the death rates are higher than compared to unvaccinated.
So instead of big surges in cases, we want to see a big surge in vaccinations this week.
So a paper by Fahrenholt in Houston studied these individuals, and they were the one to break the news that a fully vaccinated person can get Delta, contract it, and pass it to another vaccinated person. Venkata Krishnan started studying this and found that the Delta variant, the spike protein, had changed its conformation where the antibodies from Pfizer cannot hit it. So the antibodies from Pfizer now are useless. Even in high concentrations, they can't seem to hit Delta adequately. And then this whole thing blew open last week with a report out of Oxford, the tropical medicine unit located in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. They were able to actually to lock down the hospital. They didn't let the workers leave. The workers were in their quarters. They were fully vaccinated workers with AstraZeneca about 2 months after being vaccinated. So as good as you're going to get. And they started to develop Delta. It was a very well done study. It was published in Lancet. And then the bombshell finding was that the viral loads in the mouth and nose of those vaccinated were 251 times that from the previous unvaccinated era. So as we sit here today, the vaccinated are, it appears to be, super spreaders. They're carrying large amounts of virus and then passing it to the unvaccinated, creating the Delta pandemic.
I have the pleasure to announce today a blast from the past to support and encourage our nationwide vaccination effort.
Thank you very much for your kind donations.
This Saturday between 12 and 8 p.m. on Channel 200 and supported to date by Discovery, screened on 3 and Māori TV and streaming on Hahana Facebook, will be holding a Vaxathon.
Troubled times, making things much harder than they used to be for you and me and everyone.
The Vaxathon will go live across the country, highlighting vaccine initiatives from Cape Reinga to the Bluff and urging anyone who hasn't been vaccinated yet to make Saturday the day for their first dose, and anyone who has been 3 weeks or longer since their first dose to get their second. The Vaxathon will include real-time data on how each region is tracking with vaccination uptake throughout the day. There will be prizes locally for those getting vaccinated, information from experts on the safety of the vaccine, and some healthy competition between towns and regions.
We need help.
Why are our government officials using propaganda to promote a vaccine which looks like it's not sufficiently effective and it looks like it's not safe? Why are they doing that?
Vaccinations will be available throughout the day and into the night on Saturday across GP clinics, many of whom are opening especially for the day.
Just as we started to lay out the concept that we were going to have a genetic transfer technology injected into humans, have human bodies take up this genetic material for an undetermined period of time and have an uncontrolled production of the spike protein, which we know was dangerous, and have it expressed in cells and have our body attack our own cells, causing cellular and tissue destruction, and then having the spike protein then circulate in the body widely, causing more damage. We knew within a few months the spike protein was driving injury to blood vessel cells. We published that from our lab. Dr. Zhang published that, causing blood clotting, which is a disastrous. That's the final common cause of death in COVID-19. To have a vaccine introduce the final cause of death in an individual is really a startling idea.
Pharmacies, marae, churches, mosques, community centers, workplaces, and drive-through centers.
So Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J are all packaged in lipid nanoparticles. Lipid nanoparticles. Okay, that's the first point. Now, the lipid nanoparticles, papers coming out of China years ago were telling us the lipid nanoparticles go to many places in the body. The hormone-producing organs, the ovaries, the testes, the adrenal glands, they go up into the brain. Okay, so just that alone, we'd say, listen, do we want a vaccine going up into the brain? Do we want a vaccine going into the heart? It was offered free of charge. In fact, radio commercials have been drumming for months on this, and people literally just marched into vaccine centers and they were told to do it. A lot of them are patriotic. A lot of patients came in and said they took the vaccine. And
I'm really excited. You know, it's science. I trust science. I love science.
I didn't say much. But by March, we started to see disturbing trends. It became obvious to me where there were deaths there occurring after the vaccine.
You can go to covid19.govt.nz to find out where you can get a vaccine locally this Saturday.
You know, our program started, I think, December 18th. January 22nd, we had 186 deaths after the vaccine. The limit that we would expect for a program this size is about 150. But by March, there was already 1,600 deaths that have occurred after the vaccine.
And if you're a business or community group who wants to support the Vaxathon on Saturday, visit covid19.govt.nz/SuperSaturday.
We're currently at 13,000 deaths certified by the CDC.
That was 6 weeks ago. Here's the latest number of dead and injured. CDC. 16,310 dead. 778,685 injured following COVID-19 injections through October 1, 2021. Plus 2,102 fetal deaths following COVID-19 injections of pregnant mothers.
Stunning. This is stunning. With the swine flu vaccine, you know, 25 deaths, the program was shut down. It ultimately got up to 53 deaths. We had vaccinated 55 million people in the United States, 500 cases of Guillain-Barré. It was considered a public health failure. And here at 13,000 deaths, there's no mention of a public health failure. In fact, we've never had a press briefing on vaccine safety or efficacy. I bet the New Zealand government has not made a single safety report. You have 1.8 million people in your country vaccinated. I bet you haven't seen a single safety report. No country has. Everybody should be disturbed about this. Wait a minute. This is a big public program. Where is the reporting on efficacy and safety?
A huge thank you to those who have already come forward. The support from business in particular has just been fantastic.
Well, two separate reports, one by McLachlan out of London, reviewed the data, reviewed the vignettes that are available in VAERS, and determined that 50% of these deaths occur within 48 hours of the shot. 80% occur within a week. They are very strongly temporally related. And then an analysis by Rose and colleagues have shown that the non-fatal injuries are in four major areas: neurologic, cardiac, immunologic, and hematologic, and they tend to skew towards younger people. They have a more vigorous spike protein production, and they cause even more damage in the human body.
Nationwide, we have the capacity to administer well over 100,000 vaccines in a single day. That would lift our vaccination rates considerably. There is nothing stopping us other than people showing up.
We look in the yellow card system in the UK, the same pattern exists. So there is a very strong biologic plausibility, very strong temporal relationship. There's internal consistency within the US and then certainly within age groups and everything that we see. There's external consistency between the United States, the UK, the EU, almost certainly Australia, New Zealand, if we can get the data. And on top of that, it's very cohesive. That is, it's very consistent. And the signal is large. There's a large association. We have just fulfilled all of Hill's tenets of causality, meaning that the vaccine is, we are very certain about this, the vaccine is directly killing individuals. This is a very important conclusion. It's directly killing individuals.
Our current vaccination record for a single day is 93,334 vaccines in one day, which was on the 26th of August. And our biggest number of vaccines in a single week is 552,586, and that was the week ending the 5th of September. So those are the records that we should try and beat this week.
The word we should use is tip of the iceberg. Whatever we're seeing reported through spontaneous reporting systems, there must be many more people that didn't report it, right?
A report submitted to the Department of Health and Human Services in 2010 concluded that, quote, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported by the VAERS system, fewer than 1%.
What really worries me here is that that is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a report to the Select Committee, the Health Select Committee, about the CALMS database, and they suggest that only 5% of adverse reactions ever make it to the database.
New Zealand MedSafe CALM database, up to 18th of September. All adverse events, 20,584. Serious adverse events, 757. Deaths, 68.
We have along now with a huge group of volunteers. I've lost count how many people are working now in the health forum. We're probably between 25 and 30 key volunteers who are putting many hours a week into this, all unpaid. So what we have morphed into is a group where we have created a citizens database. So in Israel, the people became very concerned about the experiences they were having and the stories they were reading on social media. And they set up something called the People's Committee, which is a voluntary group of lawyers and doctors and just ordinary citizens. And so we decided to create a parallel structure here in New Zealand because we have the government MedSafe reporting, or CALM, Centre for Adverse Reaction Monitoring. So MedSafe collect the data and give a very, very abbreviated and pared down version to the public, the public facing. We wanted to get a little bit more detailed than that. And so we started collecting the records, the injuries of all of these thousands and thousands of people that were joining the health forum. So we now have two teams. We have an adverse reaction team and a post-COVID vaccine death team. You can imagine that's a pretty tough team to be volunteering in, right? So we have, as of today, collected over 1,000 injury reports in the citizens database, and we actually haven't collected the mild ones. So we don't have records of, you know, a sore arm or a headache for 24 hours. The reports that we've given the attention to are all serious reports. They're things ranging from extreme prolonged exhaustion lasting for weeks, migraine headaches lasting for weeks, and people who previously had no headache issues, ranging all the way up to really serious things like blood clots, strokes, heart attacks, brain bleeds, all temporally related to receipt of either the first or second dose of the COVID vaccine. And on our deaths database, we now have, I checked just before I jumped on, so we've now got 198 deaths here in New Zealand. And then we have four more deaths of New Zealanders who have received the Pfizer vaccine overseas. So we're up to about 202 deaths. So just to make it clear, these are sudden and unexpected deaths that are temporally related to the receipt of the first or second dose of the vaccine. They're very strongly clustered around the first 48 hours. So we have, I should have checked before I came on, but we have, I think, around 30% of all the deaths clustered in the first 48 hours and then gradually tapering out over about a four-week period. So I think our furthest out death is about 6 weeks after the injection, but most of them are clustered in the first 2 weeks. So they're sudden and unexpected. Some of them are in elderly with, you know, other comorbidities. A lot of them are in younger people in their 30s, 40s and 50s that have no comorbidities, and they've either died in their sleep or they've died suddenly and unexpectedly with a fatal heart attack or a stroke or a brain bleed or blood clot. Those are the main categories of deaths that we've recorded.
Now, I know some people are nervous about the vaccine and wanting to wait a bit longer to see what happens. I understand. It's natural to have questions. But I can assure you the vaccine is safe. And Auckland, let's aim to get first doses over 90% by the end of Saturday and see a surge in second doses too. New Zealand has been world leading on keeping down our case numbers, hospitalisations and deaths, as well as delivering a strong economy and low unemployment. I believe we can be world leading on vaccines too and become one of the most highly vaccinated and protected countries globally.
People who are vaccinated will still get COVID-19.
We've got the Delta variant that's literally just laughing at these vaccines, scooting right past it.
Which will mean we'll be able to get back on track to safely open up our restrictions that we currently have and get back to something that feels just a bit more normal.
Normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
Kia ora koutou katoa, namahi nui kia koutou. But to get there, we need a big collective effort, and we need it soon. The countdown is on, and waiting for your vaccine means we need to wait longer with some of those restrictions, and I know how frustrating they've been.
people are talking, and you're talking about vaccine hesitancy. You know, no one's going to want to take a shot if they think that's going to end their life. That is a full stop vaccine hesitancy. And if we're going to have a vaccine program rollout with a novel gene transfer technology program with a dangerous mechanism of action, which Pfizer does have a dangerous mechanism of action, boy, it better be safe. I mean safe. Now, if it was a drug and we're going to ask, 1.8 million Kiwis to take a drug, I got to tell you, with about five deaths, it would get a warning saying it's a warning, could cause death. 50 deaths, it's off the market, gone. Because we have scores and scores of people neurologically damaged, crippled, disabled, heart attacks, myocarditis, blood clots. I mean, miscarriages, stillbirths. I mean, it's extraordinary what's going on. We have an out of control snowball of a biological catastrophe. And we're doing it to ourselves. We're doing it at the point of a needle.
This is far from over.
And everyone needs to get vaccinated.
Yeah. And honestly, the correct thing to do is never have that needle get close to your arm. It's pretty obvious. That's the line.
And lastly, what is your key message for those looking forward to some new freedoms in Auckland from Wednesday?
Well, I think there's only one freedom that really counts with all of this, and that's the freedom to go and get vaccinated.
If we had a vaccination rate at 90% or above in either Hamilton or Raglan, it is highly unlikely that we would be here today announcing level 3 restrictions. So please, get vaccinated today if you want to avoid level 3 in your community. So as we all look ahead and we think about summer and the plans that we are making, make the first step a vaccine. It is the thing that will make those summer plans possible. So I urge everyone, especially our young people who have shown great leadership already, to help us get the job done. And ask everyone to do it for children who can't be vaccinated, for the vulnerable and most at risk of getting sick, and so that you can be part of festivals and events safely. I think it's the least that everyone deserves this year.
You cannot be asked to take something into your body that doesn't work and that's dangerous and think it's okay. You can't link that to your freedom.
Teachers in schools should prepare, a mandate is coming.
If I was a teacher, I would certainly be making sure that I was getting my first dose of the vaccine at this point.
And people say, well, I'm going to lose my job. I said, no job's worth it. Oh, my child can't play football. I can't have school. It's not worth it.
I'm sick of living in the panic room. I want to get out. I want to go overseas again. And then I want them to come and go. And the only thing that's going to allow that is vaccination.
Yep, exactly. That's your passport.
It's not worth it. I'm telling you, I'm just way too many people dead and way too many people injured. And, if you're pitted with the idea of lose your life or lose your job, you're going to have to lose your job and figure out something because we're just going to have to have enough backbone. If tomorrow the vaccine went away in New Zealand, honestly, it'd be a national holiday. It would be a national holiday. If vaccine program went away and you just returned to normal, no lockdowns, nothing else, and just treated the small number of people with COVID-19, it would be a national holiday. I'd come over there and we'd celebrate together. The vaccine, in a sense, has become a menace. It's been a propagandized, socially weaponized menace. And it's terrible that we found out the vaccines don't work and they're not safe. I mean, that's the problem. Like, vaccinate the healthcare workers. What's that going to do? It's probably going to worsen COVID-19. They're more likely to get it and carry it and get sick. I mean, it'd be better to have unvaccinated workers. What I would advise is an immediate halt to the vaccine program. And I wouldn't be the first one. This has been advised by the evidence-based consulting group in the UK. They're the chief contract consulting group to the World Health Organization. They reviewed the yellow card system and their formal recommendation is shut down the program, not safe. So I'd advise New Zealand immediately to drop the vaccine program. Immediate dissolution of any lockdown or prohibition program, complete return to work to normal. Just because someone took the vaccine and they did okay, it doesn't mean it's okay to harm the next person. That's terrible. And the other thing that's not okay is to eliminate someone's freedom of choice. There's a principle of autonomy that says that no one under any circumstance, at any time in their life should receive any pressure, coercion, or threat of reprisal for taking an injection into their body. And no one should ever take an injection that they perceive could damage them.
So everyone will be able to get a vaccine between now and the end of the year. But of course, human behavior suggests that there will be some people that we have to actually really go out and look for.
And everybody listening to this to understand, this vaccine that you have can damage you. And there's no doubt about it. The scoreboard is lit up as bright as it can be. Death, hospitalization, cardiac, neurologic injury, miscarriage, stillbirth, paralysis, permanent disability. It can't get worse. It honestly can't get worse. I can't think of any drug or any injection that is this dangerous as this group of vaccines, in particular your Pfizer vaccine.
So that's why we all need to make sure we get vaccinated.
Cause we the people are still here in the rear, yo, we don't need you.
I'd rather have dangerous freedom than peaceful slavery. And just this week, the terrorism legislation has been railroaded through, rushed under emergency. Another name for it, I can just tell you right now, is called Before the Public of New Zealand Catch On to Their Deception. Now, if I read this bill right, they amended the word terror for intimidation or replaced it with intimidation and fear, so that any group or person that causes others to feel fearful and intimidated, you're guilty of terrorism. Well, I'd like to inform the government and the police that I know such a terrorist group already exists now, and it's operated in this country, and it fits this bill perfectly. And they are as guilty as anything. You know, they intimidate and they cause fear in our lives. That's the New Zealand media. They are the real terrorists of New Zealand. The mafia called media are the ones that are in Jacinda's pocket, feeding we the people. They're not feeding us the information all the time. Information is withheld from us. Sometimes it's not given in the context of what it is, and it's not true sometimes. We're told figures, we're told that we can be free from our lockdown, we're told that it can be all over, and the next thing, we're in lockdown again.
I'll never surrender. I'll never surrender. I'll never surrender. Not going down. I'm gonna stand my ground. To the final hour, till the fight is over. Gonna soldier on, 'cause I'm an army of one. Gonna feel my power, till the fight is over. Till the fight is over. Till the fight is over. I'll never surrender. 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 There's a strength in me. God knows. I'm a survivor, it's fighting over. 'Cause I'm rising up, never giving up, never say never. This fight ain't over, this fight ain't over. This fight ain't over.